Welcome back from lunch. Hope everyone had a fulfilling meal, and we're going to dive right into it. Opening up the afternoon session is Habitat, and I will kick it over to Chair Melissa Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me mute my computer first. So today, the first topic on the agenda is to go through our essential fish habitat framework. Julian plans to present sort of on the background history of the document, and once that is complete, Michelle will go over the details of the actual framework itself. And we do have one committee motion to present forward, and I'll have probably a second motion after that. So without further ado, I will let Julian take it away. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that introduction, and good afternoon, council members. My name is Julian Garrison, council staff, and I'll be giving, as Madam Chair mentioned, I'll be giving an overview of the methods and some of the background for today's EFH designation framework. So today's framework and updates really built off prior foundational work that's really spanned the last decade. Designations were last updated in Omnibus Habitat Amendment 2, and that was mainly using 10-minute squares analysis of federal and state trawl survey data. So those are non-model-based methods, and they relied on data through 2005. Next, we had the Northeast Regional Habitat Assessment. That was a collaborative effort with the Mid-Atlantic Council and other regional partners to characterize fish habitat distributions, abundance, and quality. The species distribution models developed during this work, as well as the various survey and environmental data sets, were reviewed and endorsed by a joint SSC subpanel in 2022. And so this NIRHA work really formed the backbone of the model-based EFH methods in today's action and in the joint EFH 5-year review. That was completed last year in collaboration with the Mid-Atlantic Council, and it was endorsed by the New England Council at the January meeting. And so most of the background and materials from these prior work and prior actions can be found on the council website, as well as several R Shiny apps developed by Tori Kentner at Mid-Atlantic Council staff. And there have been ongoing conversations about how we can share out these products going forward. But for now, they're going to live on the council webpage, and the Shiny apps are hosted by the Mid-Atlantic Council. For today's action, the council initiated this framework back in April, recognizing the need for updated data and advanced designation methods since the prior designations. This action updates EFH for 10 council species, which include Atlantic cod, Atlantic herring, monkfish, and the seven skates in the skates complex FMP. And the remaining 18 species will be updated in future council actions. This slide shows the overall workflow for this that's kind of has gone into this framework this past spring and summer. A lot of this process has involved close coordination between the Habitat PDT, Mid-Atlantic staff, and modeling contractor Dr. Chris Hake during the development of the species distribution models and drafting the EFH maps and texts. And we also consulted with various species PDT, APs, and other experts, as well as performed a literature review. And so today's single action really incorporates all of that feedback and all of those adjustments to the designations and that we've had this summer. to dive in a little bit closer to the methods themselves. For most of our species, including the 10 for today, we've had sufficient fish abundance data from federal and state trawl surveys to be able to use this workflow on the left here in black. And this workflow is further divided into an offshore modeled component that relies on species distribution models and a more inshore and nearshore component that based on an analysis of estuarine and coastal zones. And so these come together to form the draft maps, which, as I mentioned on the previous slide, then kind of goes through further refinement and complements the text descriptions. We also have, just to mention, we do have a, for three of our species, not in this framework, we have alternate data processing and literature review methods for those, and those will be in future years' updates. The modeled pathway or the modeled component for these designation updates use joint species distribution models. And these are useful because they allow us to relate observed densities or abundance of our species to environmental covariates. And we can then, so that's depicted visually on this slide in that series of figures. And we can then use those modeled relationships to predict species density beyond areas where fish were sampled in the trawl surveys. And so this modeling effort is relying on federal trawl surveys as well as the NEMAP, Maine, New Hampshire, and Massachusetts trawl surveys. And currently in this presentation, it's showing those four surveys with data from 2000 to 2019. But throughout the summer, we've had some feedback and heard interest in looking at recent time series for our species. And so since the Joint Habitat Committee and AP meeting 2 weeks ago, we've heard from, we've been working to include the, to shift the time series to 2002 and to 2022, and we'll also be including the Connecticut Long Island Sound trawl and CHESMAP survey data in these models. So these maps will be updated with the final model runs before the final submission, but we expect that this won't substantially alter the maps and will also hopefully provide better resolution into some of the lower salinity areas. For today's action, we've had enough data to model juveniles and adults separately for most of our species, except for barn door, rosette, smooth, and thorny skate. For those four species, we are using pooled data for those life stages. Another useful part about these models is that as joint SDMs, it allows us to model all of the species together simultaneously. And this lets us explore relationships and shared niches between species and life stages, which can have useful applications for EFH and beyond EFH. So we go from the continuous density predictions and bin them into discrete quantiles, which builds off of the North Pacific's model-based EFH methods. We're also borrowing their terminology for these quantiles, but unlike the North Pacific, we're using the top 75% quantile, or the principal habitat area, as the basis for our designations. This is the same quantile that the Mid-Atlantic is also using. And we've had a lot of conversations at the PDT, AP, and committee levels about these quantiles and about this language. And we felt that consistency in language amongst regions was important, especially as more councils are moving towards model-based EFH, and that this principal habitat area strikes a better balance of focusing the designations into areas that are more essential, while still being inclusive enough for GARFO's EFH consultation process. And this also helps account for some seasonal limitations in the survey data. So this will produce a single, contribute to a single EFH designation for each life stage. But these quantiles are available as ancillary information in the framework and during EFH consultations. And so the models can only reliably predict so far beyond the conditions where the trawl survey sampled. So what this means is they tend to be a bit less reliable in low salinity areas. And so for that, we hand it off to the non-modeled component of these updates. Previously, OHA2 had designated whole estuaries if there were any species occurrences, which is somewhat unrealistic, especially since a lot of our species are marine or polyhaline species. And so Tori Kentner at Mid-Atlantic staff updated this approach to instead partially designate estuaries and nearshore regions based on suitable habitat conditions. And so here we're using inshore spring and fall survey data from 2000 and 2019. This will be updated to match the new time series. And Tori used bathymetry and fall survey, bathymetry and salinity data to subset the estuaries into zones based on combinations of depth and salinity thresholds, which are shown on the screen there. So the salinity zones or conditions are marine, polyhaline, mixing, and tidal fresh, and then we had shallow, mid, and channel or deep areas. And so she identified suitable estuary zones based on overlaps with inshore occurrence data from these trawls, as well as cross-referencing the text descriptions and the literature. And this approach turns on suitable zones constrained to the same latitudes as the modeled ranges, rather than turning on the whole estuaries. And so what you get is this map where you only have the zones that match, that have suitable habitat conditions. That's in the light blue. This map also shows the inshore occurrence data in the red. We then join those areas to the model-based principal habitat quantiles from the SDM outputs. That's the kind of the blue-green and everything within. And those together produce the principal habitat area and is the EFH designation. So that final area is clipped to the US EEZ. And these are static map examples, but Tori also developed a Shiny app that provides an interactive walkthrough through of this process, so you can really see how the various data inputs are coming together. And so, as I mentioned earlier, we didn't have the data to separately model each life stage and species for all of our species. So this table summarizes which of our species in today's action are getting separate juvenile and adult maps versus those that are getting combined. We also are going with a proxy approach for the egg and larval maps that uses other life stages, the model outputs from other life stages. Previous EFH updates had used ichthyoplankton data, but those are now inconsistently available for our species. And we've had conversations with Science Center staff who were familiar with those data and felt that it wasn't a big improvement to continue using those data over other life stages as proxies. This was an area that an area of research that we emphasized in the EFH review as well. So we generally opted for this more consistent approach across our species, where we use the union of adult and juvenile maps as the proxy for egg and larval distributions, unless we had other more specific information that recommended otherwise. So for example, we've had some conversations with herring PDT members that suggested that adult fall distributions are a better approximation for eggs specifically. For other species like cod and monkfish, the survey data and models only partially overlap known spawning seasons, so we erred on the side of being more inclusive with the union. Moving on to the text descriptions, these generally are meant to complement the maps and are an opportunity to provide additional context that the static maps can't easily represent. So this includes information about the spatial distribution, habitat characteristics, and variations in habitat use, and drew upon a variety of information sources, including the maps and model outputs, inshore and offshore survey data, literature, and consultations with experts. And so an example of the environmental ranges that we're referencing in the text is shown below for juvenile Atlantic cod. This slide summarizes the outreach process throughout this summer to seek feedback on the draft designations. This process really evolved over the course of the summer based on feedback, and we're open to continued feedback on ways to improve upon it for next year. But we generally found it most helpful to reach out to broader groups for awareness and then really dig into the designations with individual or smaller groups. And on the slide are some common themes from this feedback, some of which I've mentioned previously. These consultations really focused on identifying gaps in the maps and text, and a lot of our conversations revolved around balancing the need for broad versus focused EFH. As mentioned earlier, there was interest in exploring more recent years of data and binning outputs into the smaller time blocks rather than the full 20-year series. These various groups also suggested additional data sets, either to verify or eventually integrate. Before we take questions on these methods, we want to just give a quick comparison. Between the no action and updated designation methods. In the interest of time, I won't read through all of this, but we wanted to emphasize that these methods generally updated the data sets to use more recent data, advanced the methods to use model-based methods, and improved the consistency across species, both in the data sets incorporated, how the data were processed, and the language used. And so these differences really are kind of made manifest in if you compare the old versus or the current designations versus the new ones. And so they tend to be more continuous, less patchy, and finer resolution and more reliant on the underlying habitat conditions. Right. And so with that, I'd be happy to take any questions on the methods.
Thank you, Mr. Garrison. To the council, any questions on the presentation so far? Seeing none, you may continue.
Great, thanks. So I'm going to pick it up from here. Just to walk you through briefly the contents of the framework document, we are preparing this as a categorical exclusion, so it should have some pretty minimal information about impacts. But we put some of the background and description that Julian just gave you about the methods will be in that introduction section of this document. We will prepare a separate, more detailed document probably to update the report that we gave you during the EFH review that'll have all of the methods as refined throughout the first part of this year, so that we have, you know, one place where you can go to understand the EFH designation methods. Got a section about the alternatives that describes the map and text for all the species. We don't go into the text here in the presentation, but please do take a look at it at your convenience. We have a fishing effects evaluation that captures some of the highlights of the evaluation that we developed for the EFH review. So you can see the full report from that on the website. We provided the link earlier in the slides. And then we just provided some highlights here about areas that we have in place, kind of what's the trends in fishing effects across gear types and within gear types. And then just a quick summation of how that relates to the designated EFH that are the proposed action alternative here. We identify, as I mentioned, some impacts, and we highlight a few areas for future work. This is outgrowth of discussions we had during the EFH review, and then the remaining sections of the document. Just to highlight, I think we talked a bit at the committee and advisory panel meeting about the additional model outputs, including the quantiles from the SDMs and the other environmental covariates, kind of some of the information about smooth terms. All of that will go into an appendix. And so that'll be potentially useful to the council as we, you know, try and understand species distributions and what's determining that. Also should be useful to the regional office for EFH consultation. The environmental ranges that Julian mentioned that make their way into the text that are based on the survey data, those will be fully summarized in that appendix as well. And then we did, as we were doing the Southern New England Habitat Area Particular Concern designation a few years ago, we developed a short description of the EFH consultation process. And because this framework also felt relevant to be able to explain that to the council so you could have that for reference, we've included that here. Skipping that one. So the alternatives in the framework, there's two, they're bundled. So the alternative one, the no action alternative, includes the current designations as they were updated in Omnibus Amendment 2, which went into effect in 2018. Julian talked about how those were developed, and this is just kind of a quick summary for you. And then the alternative two in the framework is all of the updated designations in combination, so we're asking you to recommend those as a package. Again, you know, relies on very similar data, but an updated time series, as Julian described, combines both the species distribution model-based and non-model-based workflows, and then updated the text as well to link it to the model outputs and updated environmental ranges from the species data. So now I'm just going to walk through quickly the maps. These are all the maps that are identified in that table that Julian presented a few slides back. So we don't have a unique map for every life stage and every individual life history stage. In some cases, they're combined. So you can just get a sense for what they look like. And again, we'll be kind of perfecting and finalizing these before we submit the framework, just to include those additional couple years of data and folding the Long Island Sound and CHESMAP surveys into the SDMs. But this is, and then again, just to emphasize, the whole footprint here that you're seeing in the blue-gray color is the EFH designation. So there's no sort of difference in different areas. It's either EFH or it's not EFH. But then certainly all those additional model outputs and products can be used as the council applies EFH designations to its own work or as the fishery service is applying them to consultation. So this is the cod egg and larval designation. Again, the union of the juvenile and adult species distribution model outputs and inshore data processing combined into a single map. And then for each of the juvenile and adults where we have a model-based approach to EFH, we're showing you the different quantiles on the right, and then we're showing you just the proposed footprint on the left. So this is for juvenile cod, adult cod, For herring, this is the one Julian mentioned, that we were doing something a little bit different with the egg designation as compared to some of our other species. The spawning season for herring overlaps well with the fall survey, and so rather than using the entire distribution, which is kind of better reflected on the panel on the right, we're getting just the fall distribution, which focuses on Georges Bank and the Gulf of Maine. So these are the egg and larval maps. This is the juvenile herring map and the adult herring map. And again, these are showing you the average model outputs across the 6 months that we included and from the spring and the fall surveys, but we'll have monthly outputs and other information in that appendix for more information. This is the monkfish egg and larval map, again, taking that union of the adult and juvenile as a proxy for egg and larvae. Juvenile monkfish, adult monkfish, fairly similar to juveniles. Barn door skate, this is one where we're just finishing running those combined models now. We initially, Chris had felt that we probably had enough data to break them out into juvenile versus adult barn door skate model runs and maps, but in kind of looking at the model outputs and thinking about the diagnostics and other, you know, just the size of the data set, felt like it was better to combine the life stages. So we're doing final runs now that combine all sizes of barn door skate that are caught in the survey into a single model. And so the proposed DFHO looks something like the figure on the left, which is basically a union of the two sets of model outputs. Clear nose skate, you can see here for eggs and adults. Juvenile clear nose skate have a more southerly distribution. They're one of, I think, the only, there's I think, some other mid-Atlantic species that do come up in the CMAP data in the southeast. But here in New England, where there's really only one species that's caught in any meaningful numbers there. And for clear nose skate, it's generally the juveniles that are being caught that far south, and so we've only included that CMAP footprint within the juvenile EFH. This is pretty similar to, I think, what we did during Omnibus Amendment 2. So that's why you see but we're not modeling, the model domain doesn't extend to the southeast. Little skate, this is the map for eggs and adults. And then for juveniles, rosette skate has this more offshore distribution. So this is, and again, just given the amount of data we have, we pool everything together for rosette skate and run one model. So you're seeing here the combined model outputs across all sizes of rosette skate, and we use that as a proxy for the egg map as well. Smooth skate, again, similar to barn door, decided a little bit later in the process that it was really more appropriate just to pool all the data for smooth skate and develop a single EFH map. And so it'll look probably something similar to what you see on the left, where we're designating most of the Gulf of Maine and then some limited areas south of Georges Bank on the slope. Thorny skate, again, is based on a combined model as well. And then winter skate, finally, this is the map that we'll use for eggs and adults, and this is the map for juveniles. So I mentioned, I think, that this is planned to be a categorical exclusion from NEPA. The only action here is to update EFH designations. They actually aren't within the fishery regulations, and this action is really an administrative action. EFH designations, you know, can certainly influence the council's decisions about fishery management, but don't directly affect the distribution of fishing or the use of fishing gears in areas. Generally, we talk about that these updated designations are using the best and most current scientific information available in terms of the methods with the species distribution models, as well as just using much more recent data than we used in our previous designations. We talk a little bit about on the impact section about effects on managed species, habitat, protected species, and human communities. Generally, we think there would be indirect positive impacts on species and habitat conservation as we're using kind of more current data about their species distributions versus the current designations. And just to note, the habitat area of particular concern, they are a subset of essential fish habitat. We do have In general, you know, if you aggregate all these designations, even just these 10, they really do cover most of the region when you combine all the species together. But we do have some habitat area particular concern that are designated for juvenile Atlantic cod specifically. So we did want to check and make sure that those HAPC areas would continue to remain within juvenile Atlantic cod EFH, and they would. So we have the inshore cod HAPC that covers coastal areas off Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island, out to 20 meters depth, and that would still be designated. We have a juvenile cod HAPC in the Great South Channel region that would still be within the designation footprint. And then out on the northern edge is also an HAPC specific to juvenile Atlantic cod, and that would continue to be part of a designated EFH under the alternative two. In the fishing effects evaluation, we looked, for the five-year review, we looked at effects of fishing on habitat at regional scales, so the whole northeast region, at sub-regional scales by ecological production unit, and combining all gears and then across for different individual gear types, so trawl, scallop dredge, clam dredge, longline, gillnet, and trap. So we share both monthly information as well as we mostly focus on summarizing annual averages for that EFH review. So we had a year where we didn't have data for clam dredges, so kind of the most recent complete year is 2022. During that year, we had about 11% habitat disturbance on average region-wide. So wanted to look at that. What is the average habitat disturbance within EFH areas? If it was kind of much greater than that regional average, that might give you an indication of something that needs a closer look in terms of what's causing that disturbance and where are those disturbances higher. Conversely, if you had a much lower percentage of disturbance in an EFH area, then that's probably not a species that you need to be as concerned about in terms of minimizing effects of fishing on the habitat for the species. So just to get a kind of starting point for having those sort of conversations down the road when we update any adverse effects minimization measures in a future council action, did a calculation of this mean fishing effect. So it varies a little bit, but it's generally, you know, it's less than 20% across any of the species. For some, it's the lowest, it's around 4%. For, I think, thorny skate, it was a bit higher, around 19%, as compared to that 11% regional average. So the committee and the advisory panel met on September 11th. You can see the summary of that discussion in your meeting materials as a draft meeting summary. Both groups recommended that the council adopt alternative two for the updated EFH designations as preferred today. Some rationale is provided here, just focusing on updated approaches, updated data, and this being a good opportunity to include those updated data and methods into our designations. Just to mention some things that we're thinking about implementing next, we did have some discussions at meetings throughout the summer, including at the advisory panel committee meeting recently, about being able to look at trends in habitat use and how things are shifting through time. We do have some ability with the model outputs to look at that. So right now we've provided, in some of the materials we've shared previously, these 20-year trends. So this is just a linear trend. So this example here, you can see this is juvenile monkfish. The areas in the red, you're seeing lower predicted densities over the time series. The areas in the blue, you're seeing a higher predicted density over the time series. It's a little hard to see here. There's other ways that we could look at these data. You know, we could break it out into time blocks. I think as Julian was mentioning, this is something that folks were interested in. We have an opportunity through some of our IRA-funded work to dig into this a little bit more, and that's part of Dr. Hake's work plan with us this year, seeing if we can apply some of this information about trends to questions of governance, things like that. And so we'll be continuing to look at these types of issues. The Mid-Atlantic has a similar species distribution trends project as well, and so we're partnering with them where we can. Also going forward, as Julian noted, we will be doing updated EFH using these same methods for the remaining species that the council manages will have to figure out some slightly different approaches for species where we don't have the same amount of data. Red crab and salmon, for sure. We may be able to do some modeling for Atlantic wolffish, but probably not to the level that we've done here, just given the amount of data or lack of data that's available for the species. And then we're going to continue to work through ways to share the data through our own applications, potentially through the data portals, avenues like that. And if you go back to the summary report from the EFH review, we identified a lot of other kind of future work that we could consider, and so we'll continue to explore those opportunities, most likely in partnership with the Mid-Atlantic Council and others, because these are all regional, Northeast regional approaches. So I think now would be a great time if you have questions about, if you thought of any questions about the methods, or if you have any questions about the contents of the framework, and then I think we can move on to motions about this action. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Bachman. Any questions so far? Comments? Thoughts? Mr. Lucy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Fantastic presentation. It seems like you really refined things. And I noticed there was, I believe it on slide 40, you'd used fishing effects by month. So I'm not that I'm asking you to do this with the existing funding we have, but it would be, is that part of the work plan or one of the desires to look at species distribution interannually by month? Just, some of the comments I've heard from, like, Mr. Platts with, bluefish showing up at different times in the gill and different species showing up in the fisheries at different times. It sounds like with this data, you would be able to do that type of analysis. Is that correct?
Yeah, to an extent. So we certainly have the data from the spring and fall survey. Most of these inshore surveys, the regional or state ones, are spring and fall surveys too. So Chris is already providing model outputs for March, April, May, and September, October, November individually, so we can look at trends within that. We don't really have the same extent of data for the summer and the winter. Not that we could do abundance-based modeling with. I think if we were to go down the road of some kind of presence-absence modeling, that opens up the ability to use other types of data that we might have for those seasons, but we're not exploring that for EFH. I do know that species distribution models, kind of a different flavor, are part of the climate vulnerability assessment work that the Northeast Fisheries Science Center is doing. And so there may be some other products that we could look to that would have information for other seasons from that type of work. So I think just doing this has kind of put us in touch with a lot of people that are doing this type of modeling. And so if there was a specific question, we could probably bring some resources to bear on that. But
any other questions, comments? Seeing none, make sure I get this. I'll kick it over to you, Melissa. I believe you have a committee motion.
We do, Mr. Chair. So, motion from the committee. Move that the council recommends alternative two, updated EFH designations as preferred for the 2025 EFH designation framework.
Any rationale?
So as you've seen, I guess in the last 6 months, the data that you are seeing that has been analyzed for the framework document actually stemmed from the original EFH five-year review. It was during that review process that both the New England Fisheries Management Council and the Mid-Atlantic Management Council had combined efforts to produce the sort of modeling that would go into producing updated EFH. The work that is coming out of the framework is a sort of culmination of that effort using best available data to update EFH as required.
Thank you. To the council, any discussion on the motion on the table? see none at the table. Out to the public. I have Mr. Smolowitz online.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question before a comment. So is this approving the methodology or actually approving the EFH designations?
Michelle?
I guess both. But yes, this would be approving the recommended alternative EFH designations in the framework for submission.
Okay, so I think there's a real problem with that because these designations have not been ground truth. Michelle mentioned, for example, that the HMA in the channel is still going to be considered juvenile cod habitat, even though there's no recent data to support that. On the contrary, it looks that between water temperature, seals, and black sea bass taking over the niche, that there are few, if any, juvenile cod in that area. How do we deal with that? In other words, there's no data. You're designating it juvenile cod EFH, yet there's no cod there. And I'm sure this type of circumstance exists up and down the coast for just about all the species. Anyway, that's my comment.
Thank you, Mr. Smolowitz. Any other comments from the public? Not seeing any. Back to the council. Not seeing any. Is there any objection to this motion? Any abstentions? This motion will pass on consensus. I believe you have another motion, Ms. Smith.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, motion from myself that will need a second. Move to submit the 2025 EFH designation framework, which will include updated EFH designations for Atlantic cod, Atlantic herring, monkfish, and the seven species in the state complex to NOAA fisheries.
Thank you. Is there a second to this motion? Peter Ehrstead, rationale.
Thank you, Mr. Ehrstead. So, again, this is somewhat of a required work timeframe for us. Methods have been validated through both the EFH review and then also through the work that we have been producing and having updates with the council. And so now, once staff receive final data updates to produce the maps, it will be ready to submit to NOAA.
Thank you for that. Any comment, discussion on the motion in front of us from the council? Seeing none, public. Seeing none. Back to the council one more time. Seeing none, is there any objection to this motion? Any abstention? This motion will pass with consensus with one abstention. Mr. Pentney. This also back to staff.
Thank you. Yes, staff have two more items of business just to complete their updates.
I just have a few slides to wrap up the Habitat Committee report. The first, you may remember from Omnibus Habitat Amendment 2, there was a 3-year sunset provision for a couple of the dedicated habitat research areas, specifically Stellwagen and George's Bank. So if you remember, in 2022, Council went through the process of reviewing the research to date in those areas and recommending retaining both of those research areas. So it's 3 years later, so we're going through the same process again. and considering continued retention or not. Other areas can also be considered. So as an overview of this review process, GARFO requests information on research to date in those areas, puts together a final report on summary of that research, and then provides it to the council where the Habitat Committee can review the report and make recommendations, or bring it forward to you all, and the council can make recommendations on whether to retain or sunset those research areas. So all of the timing is to be determined at this point, but this process has started. And to note that GARFO is also planning to ask for information on other research in some of these other areas as part of this process. And just to summarize some work to date, because this was the last Habitat AP and committee meeting before before priorities are discussed later this fall and decided in December. So as already mentioned, the EFH five-year review is already wrapped up earlier this year. You just voted on a framework action for a subset of our species for revising EFH. We also have other work such as evaluating habitat impacts for all of our management actions, developing fishery and habitat comments on non-fishing activities, and contributing to habitat science and offshore wind and ocean planning and other activities. So that is ongoing as we have time. So in terms of 2026 work planning, the idea is to continue working on other EFH designation as another framework action next year, continuing to move forward some of the recommendations from the EFH five-year review, including the fishing effects model analyses, better integrating habitat information in some of our other initiatives, including the IRA work, really focusing on more outreach and communication products, and continuing to collaborate with regional partners and moving forward additional research and information. We do have a lot more information in the staff memo that's hyperlinked on the slide here. So for next year, the idea is to continue, as I said, moving forward with another EFH framework action, specifically to include whiting species, groundfish, and sea scallops. So a lot of these species have model-based EFH runs already or in process. And then if there's time, I believe we can evaluate our remaining species. And then lastly, the Habitat Committee also went through information provided by GARFO, so a review on the sensitive habitat viewer, and those are hyperlinked on the screen as well. It's a really neat tool. I highly recommend folks take a look. We also put together information on ocean planning slides, including the Loch Ness project that we heard an update on earlier. I was going to say earlier in the week, but that was just yesterday. Offshore wind, aquaculture. There is a new project on Newport mussels that we heard an update on. Variety of other updates, both at the federal and state level, that I tried to compile in a presentation. And then we also heard a brief update on offshore wind regional fund administrator, and you'll hear a public comment later this afternoon. More information on that. And I believe that is the last slide. So I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Couture. Any further questions on the presentation? Seeing none. Thank you. Ms. Smith, is there any more?
Madam Chair, sorry, there's too many lady chairs these days.
No worries.
That concludes the Habitat Report. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you for staff. The three of you put together a great presentation there, and thank you to the council. a little ahead, so you guys get an extra 20 minutes here. So come back at 3:10. Thank you.